and he calls me. I'm going to the sporting goods store. Sporting goods store? You never work out. What the hell are you doing in a sporting goods store? You'll see. Freddie goes in. He buys a high-powered bow and arrow.
A crossbow?
Yes. He says, we got to kill John Travolta.
This is the Extra Hot Crepe Podcast, episode 323 for the week of October 5th, 2020. I am Open Magic Mike, David T. Cole, and I'm here with the one here from Jersey, Sarah D. Bunting.
That's my state. Good night.
Microphone cord flicker, Tara Ariano.
What else? What else?
And John Travolta hitman, Brandy Brown.
Three shots to the door.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. We are here with Brandy Brown. Hello, Brandy.
Hello,
Brandy.
Hello. Yay. Yay.
This is perfect because we are talking about the Comedy Store at Brandy's request. Brandy is a comedian, and we will get into it in a minute. First, what you need to know about this show. It is a documentary series on Showtime.
Asterisk.
Yeah. So Mike Binder, a stand-up comic turned actor, then writer-director, is our guide through the history of the titular L.A. Comedy Club, legendarily owned through its glory years by Mitzi Shore, Polly's mother. Through archival footage and new interviews with people who have come through the club over the years, Binder attempts to tell a story of the Comedy Store and its importance in the history of stand-up. So I guess you could call it a spoiler if we talk about anecdotes or interview subjects that appear in later episodes. So while only the first one has aired so far on Showtime, as I said, we got screeners for the first three. I'm not even sure how many episodes there are going to be. It seems like at least one more based on where the third one
I
leaves
think it's
off.
Five.
How many Comedy Store comedians died that they can end an episode on, I think, is how many they're going to have.
Yeah, I looked on IMDb and it appears to be five of them.
Oh, God. Two more? That seems excessive.
One but, of the, I think the fourth one is titled Joe Rogan.
Oh,
I'm not
great.
Making that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that somewhere and wept.
Well, so anyway, here is your spoiler warning. Before we get into the details, let's do the Dave Chen check-in, TM. Go around the horn. Should you watch the show? Brandy, should our listeners watch the show?
It depends. I mean, yes, but I would, you know, put it on the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you're a super comedy nerd, maybe everyone else, just go watch some stand-up. Just watch some fun stand-up.
That's a good call. Sarah?
Yeah, same. I quit after the second episode, which I will get into why that is. But there are plenty of things on this subject that don't contain Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And I got a whole thing. I'm going to tee it high. So over to you, Dave.
Same. Yeah, Dave.
This is barely, to me, a documentary.
Uh-huh.
It is a loose chronology of the Comedy Store produced by people who own the Comedy Store, which no.
Uh-huh.
So I back up what Brandy's saying. Just watch some stand-up instead, and I think you'll get pretty much the same thing out of it. Because it is barely about the actual Comedy Store. It's just about the comedians who went there. Mm-hmm. That's how it's organized. So there's a little bit here and there about the business and what went into creating it, but not a lot, and certainly not five episodes worth. So,
yeah, I agree. As a super comedy nerd, like it just the actual footage that we see of stand up kind of just gives you blue balls in a way where it's like, oh, that's just enough to give you a taste. And then you're like, back to these idiots, like in their talking head interviews. So, I would say not even on in the background, it's like not good. So, let's get into it.
Okay.
Brandy, as I said, you chose this topic. And are a comic. I guess the point that Binder is trying to make with this project, or the point of doing it, is that, you know, to say the Comedy Store is formative to these various comedians' careers and development. And maybe I'm even reaching for this, because otherwise, after the three episodes that we saw, I don't know what the point is. But if you agree that that is the point, is Binder convincing to you in what we saw?
So I'm going to start with just a little background about me. So I'm like 11 years into stand-up now. And I am a black, straight, cis woman. I'm in Minneapolis, and my home club is Acme Comedy Club, which is kind of like a very well-regarded club in the country. It's like one of the top clubs. So this is how I'm like, this is all very relevant to how I saw it. This, like, what Mike Binder has done is made inside baseball boring to even baseball players. Which is a feat. Like, if Mike Binder did an open mic or he did a show at the Comedy Store and he wasn't, if he was as loose with his writing and his jokes as he was with this documentary, Mitzi would never have passed him at the club. Like, it's just, it's, the thing is, like, when I was working at Acme, like, when I first got hired there, first got passed there, it was near the 20th anniversary of the club. So Lewis Lee, the owner, brought back all these comics like Doug Benson, you know, like all like Ryan Stout, like all these people came back. And having a bunch of comics over different generations in a room together telling stories is great. But when you take comics and you put them individually, they're just talking about their career. And I just felt like I was just getting snippets about, oh, yeah, one time I did some time at the Comedy Store. But it's like, it's not about their relationship with the club.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just about, like, incidentally, I performed here. And I found it weird. And I know that, like, everyone's busy and it's hard to get people together. But all these people are in L.A. So how he couldn't get them in a room together or get small groups in a room together was a mystery to me. And then also, I just felt like it was like a love letter to the club, one, which is fine, but it did, there would be random stuff that would happen where you're like, hold up, could you go a little bit more into that? Because that is a dark side to this. Could you like talk about like, you know, like bookers sleeping, you know, a club owner sleeping with comics? Like, I get that like back then shit was crazy, but like, could you talk about that a bit more? Could you talk to some women about how they felt about that or how, you know, it was just random. It felt like random stories that didn't really give you a glimpse into the club. And then in the second episode where you see like a random like comic get passed into the club, you're like, well, that would have been interesting. I would have liked to see more about the new booker there. And I would have, it was just like random snippets that told no story that I was just like, this is some shit that happened at the club, which I could just go to an open mic and hear this.
Right. Man, when you said having more than one comic at the same time, like this subject matter, like really is dinner for five, right?
Yeah.
That's what this should be.
Yes.
Or the Hollywood Reporter show, you know, this
format,
where you got three or four or five comics retelling tales, bouncing off each other. Hearing the stories like who slept with who, what's the difference between bombing and what it means to everybody, how they use bombing. Because you got the sense like once in a while, it's like, well, bombing was like shooting Godzilla with electricity. It actually kind of charged me up. And some of them are like, oh, I couldn't handle bombing. But they don't really go into it. So I feel like the part Dinner for Five format would have been great.
Yeah.
Yes, totally. Binder for five minus the binder.
Yeah, another thing that'll happen is that if you take a bunch of comics like at that 20th anniversary, a weird thing happens where comics will always like fall into the hierarchy, no matter how far out they are. Because once you start headlining, you never are working with your peers again. And so you'll see like who was like the little sibling to like which headliner, even though as a newer comic, they're all like big siblings to me. So if you have five of them together, and this is, I see this in the green room, like I've worked with Dave Attell and I've worked with like Mitch Hedberg was at my home club. I started after he passed away, but you'll have people be like, wait, what, a new comic asking stuff. And then older comics like dipping in like Rashomon style in the story. And that's when it gets really funny because people will be like, oh, I didn't even know that part of the story. And it just builds. And this was just, it seemed like basically a Stan interviewing his friends. Like, I don't know how to, you know.
Yeah.
So. Well, that, this, I mean, this dovetails to what I wanted to get to with Sarah. And you sort of hinted at this with like Binder for five minus Binder, because there are two big problems with this, as far as I'm concerned. He's one. The other is what Dave alluded to, which is that the Shore children are all executive producers. So obviously there's stuff that is not going to get highlighted. Sarah, talk a little bit about the Mike Binder of it all, because
okay,
he's
well,
not good.
I mean, All right. Ever since Mind of the Married Man, I've had a grudge against Binder. Like, Binder is just this, like, mediocre dude that you're like, why? But here's why. I went to university with a guy like this who now makes a very nice living for his family and does a shit ton of corporate events, and he has a newsletter, and we're always kind of like, him? But, like, he just kept fucking showing up every day. And there are a lot, I think there are a lot of people like that who, like, are they huge names? No. But are they, like, brought into college psych classes? Like, this guy was cited in this other, like, business psychology book I was reading, and I was like, him? But, like, mm-hmm. he's funny enough, and he's persistent as fuck. That's Mike Binder. Mm. And Mike Binder is, like, the thing is that he is, like, just enough of a suck-up to get this to go, sort of, like, mm-hmm. at the production level. But then he's always inserting himself into the story that he's like, mm-hmm. well, what I remember about that. Yeah. And it's like, it's your Mike Binder. No one cares.
Right. No one even remembers that you ever did stand up. Like, stop inserting footage of yourself. No one gives a shit.
Yeah. And he's like, and then I had the pants, and it's like, no, oh my God. Like, why is this story still happening to us? I just celebrated my 70th birthday. Shut up.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, like, there's some issues here. First of all, like, look, Louis C.K. is not allowed. This is like when I'm watching true crime stuff, which I do a lot of, and as the, like, contemporary news footage B-roll to talk about, like, Harvey Weinstein, they're using footage of Matt Lauer. Uh-huh. Like, stop fucking using Matt Lauer for anything. No. You don't do that. And there's, like, no comment on this at all. There's no comment on Chris Delia's name or Joe Rogan's being on the board. And, okay, this is the final rant, and then I'll probably stop talking for a while. We as a culture have to come up with a different way to talk about Richard Pryor that starts to convey how good he actually was without reverting to this, like, very careful montaging. Like, he's such a titan to these people, and I get it. And there was a good bit in here where they kind of talked about his process, which I thought was interesting. But it, like, once Pryor enters the conversation in comedy-based documentaries, everything kind of starts to, like, stall out. Because how do you move out of that topic? Because he really was a genius, but, like, either get into it or don't. Don't go out on a montage. Like, I don't, it's hard to explain, but it's just very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And between that, the Binderness of it all, and the Louis C.K. just being like, let me explain to you a few things about comedy craftsmanship. Like, let me explain to you a few things about fucking rape. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. You're deleted.
Yeah. There's an issue, I feel like, the whole way through with Binder's taste, and that it seems questionable. Like, I mean, Jeff Ross is in the first shot of the first episode. Like, there was time to edit him out, you know? And I thought, okay, maybe it was just the screener, so I checked. And no, he was in the version that aired as well. So it's like, it's the Louis C.K. in the second episode, and maybe by the time that one airs, he will have been edited out. I doubt it now that the Jeff Ross thing has happened. But, it, you know, I understand, too, that you have to, I guess, include a whole segment about Roseanne. But then it's like we're watching it, and it's like Roseanne, her career, starting at the store, how much Mincy left her, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, and then what happened? And it's like there's like just no acknowledgement of, like, as Brandy was saying, like, some of these stories take a dark turn, and there's just no reckoning with this. Like, is this what you were thinking of, Brandy, or were there other examples that you had in your mind?
Well, I have a controversial take. I think that Louis C.K., I think Jeff Ross, I think all those people should stay in there, and here's why.
Okay.
I think if this comes up, I assume they alluded to the dark turn of the comedy club, or, you know, in the... that they're going to be going into that the next episode. That seemed to be what the indication in episode 3. Among comics today, nobody gives a fuck about the Comedy Store. Like, other people perform other places. They know it's a notoriously hard room. We understand the storied history. If you said Comedy Store, like, people in LA are like, we have other venues. We'll go to Flappers. We'll go to the Improv. We'll go to other places.
Yeah.
It's not as revered among the this generation, and it's because it has a toxic background. And so these people being the focus of it feels absolutely right. Now, what would be interesting, I think I would rather see a documentary right now on the Comedy Cellar in New York. I think that would be the better documentary because it's still revered in the way that the Comedy Store was before I started. And I'm not saying the Comedy Store isn't revered, but it attracts a certain type of people.
Right.
And, you know, it's not a big deal not to ever have played the Comedy Store at this point. And there are people
what's the average age of the people being interviewed?
Right. And I think here's my other issue with this. I think it would have been a better show even if like Whitney Cummings had done it. I think that, you know, because I think that there are certain things that like, if I started doing a documentary right now about open micers, let's say the pandemic wasn't happening, I am so far removed from that right now where I just go to my job or I just go do my set and leave. I don't know the current state of things. And I'm still telling stories to my friends who are like 10 years into this with me. And I think it should have been Whitney Cummings. If, you know, she would have looked at stuff because you could see her grappling with, here's some problematic shit. I mean, I love them. They're my family, but here's some problematic stuff. And I think she would have hit that more. And she, would have tightened it up, obviously. Like, I've heard nothing but great things, and she is a great writer. But, like, also, there's just certain stuff where you're like, wait, go back to that. Like, when Tiffany Haddish is like, yeah, she said I was too pretty or something like that, but clearly Tiffany Haddish works there. You had Marsha Warfield. I wanted to see more Black women on this because I saw some of the Black women on the marquee. I know them personally. And their takes on this and their takes on, I was really curious, like, as a woman in the industry, if like all the men are being coddled like this at my club, which they're not at my club, but if I was at the Comedy Store and I'm seeing all these men being coddled, like what's it like being a woman who has to like break through that? What's it like being a non-white male who has to break through on that? Like, what was it like for them? And that was missing. And I think that might be, you know, episode 4 seems to be talking about the dark side. And the one thing I did like that Louis C.K. pointed out is that when he was talking about, like, and Dane Cook is notorious for this too, going and doing like hour-long sets, that's a notorious thing we hear about. Like T.J. Miller does it all the time. And that was really fascinating where he's like, people don't like that. Like, I don't want to be at that show. Steve Harvey said, like, fuck this club. Just those types of things where you're like, no, go into this more. And there are just so many. This could have been 8 different documentaries. I want just a Freddie Prinze documentary.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. Based on all the stuff he did. And Mike Binder's just like walking around the club. He's like a new comic, an open micer who's just went from table to table, just listing the stories and then just put it out into a documentary. And I just, it was just really, really frustrating because you're like, wait, go back to that. Are you going to get to that? And we don't know. I might just watch just to see if he comes back to it.
Right.
I the way you're painting it, it really sounds like the Comedy Store is that really old steakhouse that you don't know who's actually going to it. And you open up the door and it's all 75-year-old white guys.
It smells like a thrift store.
It smells like cigars and old. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got Joey Diaz on there. He's got all these people from like, if you scratch the surface, there are some super problematic people that like, if you knew the industry. I mean, one of the dudes that was interviewed, like I forgot his name, like the redheaded guy, like Roseless Chris Delilah. Like, it's just like one of those things where even within a small story, like I'm just going to use the Freddie Prinze thing. You do this, they have this whole story about Freddie Prinze, this whole narrative. And then you're like, you forget midway through the narrative that we're still talking about Freddie Prinze because he jumps to something else when he didn't need to. And I was like, oh yeah, we were talking about Freddie Prinze. How did he die? Like it's just so messy. Like like I said, I mean, I've heard comic stories and I enjoy hearing them because it's my industry, but this was not like fun in a way because you just had to look at it through the lens of the Comedy Store when that clearly was not the lens.
While we're on that, can we just talk briefly about the John Travolta thing since we mentioned it up top and I don't want anybody to, what the hell was that about? They never talked about it.
Yeah.
So at a certain point in his career, Freddie Prinze felt like he was on a downward trajectory and John Travolta was on the rise, you know, like
as teen idols.
Yes. Yeah. Cause John Travolta was now on Tiger Beat and he wasn't, yada, yada, yada. And he decided that he was going to kill him. And he brought JJ Walker along with him, went to the sporting goods store beforehand, bought a crossbow and went to John Travolta's apartment, wherever he was in LA, knocked on the door. He wasn't home. And as JJ Walker says, thank goodness for that. But then he goes ahead and fires three arrows in the door and they stick in there. And, you know, they show the police report that Travolta filed.
That was the best. That was my favorite part was the police report.
Why didn't he get John Travolta? We figured it out. We know what those three arrows were. Do you want to know?
Right.
Like that would have been a perfect, great little thing, but didn't. Yeah. Maybe they tried.
I just love that, like, how much like JJ Walker just humored him. Like, sure, man. Like if one of my friends was like, hey, we're going to go murder a guy. And I was like, are you serious? And then right. I got in the car and I saw the weapon. I'm like, okay, so I'm just here to stop you. We are not going to their house. We are going to take this away. JJ's like, all right, I'll just see where this goes. And that's such like a comic thing. I end up in so many weird situations.
That was like a pattern though. Like I felt like a lot of comics were like normal society chaperones to a whole bunch of other comics. Yes. Like Sam Kinison had his, you know, Freddie Prinze. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of like they're their own devil, but who's the angel?
And yeah. There were a lot of stories where it just boiled down to like cocaine decisions could have been the title card that preceded like the story that followed, like, especially for Sam Kinison, when Marc Maron is like your sober companion. Fucking yikes. That's a lot of talking between the two guys and not a lot of anyone listening to anyone else.
Yeah, as the person who has done that several times where I'm like, I guess I'm driving you to a strip club because I do not want people getting killed with you drunk driving. Like that, it do be like that sometimes, but like, but yeah. I mean, I just want Freddie Prinze and like JJ Walker stories and I would be so happy with like an hour of that.
Yeah.
Or like a Marcia Warfield special.
Oh, yeah,
that's where I wanted to be sitting.
Yep. Or like the belly room. Cause they just do this random aside where it's this like women go there to work out stuff. And I'm like, that seems like a very unique and special community. And could you go into that more? And of course, Mike Binder didn't know what to ask about that and how, and Whitney Cummings definitely would have done that.
Yep.
Or even even a new baby comic would have nailed that, because they're like, oh, this is a weird thing we wouldn't have. Well, you know what, like newer comics would, because they do have like, there's an open mic here that's just not open to cis white males. That's it. That's the only group excluded. They can come watch, they just can't perform. And so we're used to creating safer spaces to just grow and practice, which doesn't mean that we're sheltered from these clubs, but it's just a place you don't have to deal with toxic comic stuff as much. So I think a newer comic would have explored some of these niche groups way better than Mike Binder would have.
Yeah. He has so many blind spots, and it's like the most frustrating thing about watching it is that you can't tell if it's stuff that he doesn't realize he doesn't know, or stuff where the shores were like, no, 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 that's enough.
It was very undisciplined as a product.
Yeah. Especially like, for example, in the second episode when they get into like the comics going on strike to get paid, where it's like, it just stops.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, at what point is this?
And then we fixed it by fake running over Jay Leno.
Again, I would love a documentary about that particular thing, because a thing about stand-up comedy at this point, and I think Jael Colvin, who's like does like Trump impersonations, but he's a great stand-up comic, he talks about this a lot, is that comedy needs a union, but comedy can never unionize. And the reason why is because the floor to get in, like the bar to get in, is so low that there will always be someone who will cross the line. Like just, it's really, really hard. And so feature pay has been stagnant for decades. Like they're still getting $500 for the week, which is what they were getting decades ago, and therefore the feature comics tend to live wherever the club is, as opposed to travel and like growing more. And so this type of thing, I was like very interested in the economics of that, and I would have, again, another thing I really would have loved to see explored. But again, a lot of older comics, like even you look at Joan Rivers refusing to acknowledge her staff, writing staff, wanting, you know, to unionize.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I had a hard time, so it needs to be hard for everyone else. And
exactly.
That needed to be explored. And I think we were dealing with that generation relative to the strike, and he is of that older generation. So again, that's another, you know, problem.
And
him.
He said he crossed the line too, but he feels really bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is horseshit. I mean, I'm like probably, other than Brandy, like the biggest comedy nerd of the panel, and I was very unsatisfied by it. So it had problems and as Brandy keeps saying, like, so many threads that could have been followed up and so many missed opportunities.
Hey, Brandy. Since mm-hmm. we've been talking about your time is better spent watching stand up, can you recommend some stand up specials offline, and then we'll put them in the show notes? I don't want to put you on the spot right now.
Yeah, well, what you need to know about me is that I am not a comedy nerd. Actually, I'm one of those people who accidentally found out they were good at comedy, and like, it's really weird when you're like, C plan is other people's A plan. You're like, oh, oops. So, I mean, I do have my favorites, but I'm also very ADD, where I'm like, well, I'm off the clock now. Gonna watch not stand up. So, but I can put together some recommendations.
Fair enough.
It's time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching lately. Tara, what do you got?
I watched Emily in Paris, the new Netflix show from Darren Star. The premise of the show is Emily, played by Lily Collins, Phil's daughter, Dave.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. You can feel her coming in the air tonight. She works in marketing in Chicago, and she thinks that her boss is about to go work there who's played by Kate Walsh, because they've just acquired a small little boutique agency in Paris that does mostly luxury marketing, even though Emily's firm does mostly pharmaceutical marketing. But then the boss finds out that she's pregnant and decides not to go. So Emily is going to go in her place only for a year, even though she does not speak French. And that causes a lot of problems, and there's a lot of culture clashes and blah, 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 Francais. This is the show that you will have seen two reactions to on Twitter this weekend. One, it's so stupid and I'm enraged. Two, it's so stupid and I want to watch it forever. When is season two coming? Hurry the fuck up. Both of which are extremely valid. Emily is an infuriating dolt. Every episode is about how she knows more about marketing than everyone that she works for, including like her boss. And they're like, they think she's dumb and she doesn't know anything. And then she always ends up being right, which is that part of it is very frustrating, because the show does not know anything about how social media works, including her own Instagram account. Like, she's this gorgeous 20-something person who works in social media, and yet we're supposed to think at the start of the season that her Instagram account has 200 followers. What? And all of her posts are so boring and basic and dumb. And they show her using hashtags with apostrophes in them, which you cannot do. Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
Street cred.
Exactly. Even when it tries to let her make a good point, for example, there's one of their clients is a perfumier, and they're shooting a TV ad where like a naked model goes walking up a bridge, and all of the men who are not naked, you know, look at her. And then at the end of it is like, do it for yourself or whatever, some perfume bullshit. She's like, hey, this seems kind of not okay to me, and people are going to get mad. It does not let her, you know, explain why this is bad. Like, you know, by using phrases like the male gaze or sexist or misogynist. And like, then they just try to punt by having her be like, well, just put it online and have people vote on whether they could think it's offensive or not. Like, it just will not take a position. It's so stupid. And apparently,
abortions for some, miniature American flags for others.
French flags for others.
Like, she's supposed to have a master's degree in communications, and yet she's like, so stupid. Anyway,
it's like California. Everything's a referendum.
Right. Every French critics are also mad about the way French people are portrayed, and are like offended that they show The Office opening at 10:30. But I was like, that part didn't bother me at all, because when I worked at MTV, their office opened at 10:30 too. Like, some offices open at 10:30. It's not a big deal. Anyway, it's the point is, it's almost as though someone who is as big an idiot as Emily wrote it. But whatever. The guys are hot. The clothes are gorgeous. They're done by Patricia Field, who also did the clothes for Sex and the City and Younger, which are also both Darren Star shows. They are really in Paris. which, you know, if you're yearning for travel, that will possibly satisfy the itch or make you yearn for it more. You will barely need to use any of your brain to watch it, even when it's making you mad, because it's so, so, so stupid. But that might be exactly what you are right now. I don't know.
I think that's on the menu for a lot of people.
I think so. Yeah. A lot of people, were getting there from what I could tell on Twitter. Like, some people were offended and other people were like, give me more right now. So, if this sounds like something that you want, or even if something that you might want to hate watch, either way, it is on Netflix right now. I think there's 9 episodes.
It sounds like, to me, I haven't watched it yet, but everyone's description of it sounds like somebody like muddled together the TV show from the 90s, late 90s, USA High, where a bunch of American high schoolers went to school in France, the real world, sprinkling real world Paris, and then like the final few episodes of Sex and the City. It just sounds like somebody threw all that shit together. Yeah. They're like, here we go, Netflix budget.
That sounds correct. It looks super expensive. Like, they really did shoot on location in all of these places, so it's a treat for the eyes. I will not deny that. So and I also reviewed it at Primetimer, so that is my plug. You can see that in les show notes.
Okay. Brandy, what do you have?
I want to talk about a show on Crunchyroll, not the Crunchyroll on HBO Max, like the full Crunchyroll website, which is free with ads, or you can, you know, subscribe to it. It's an anime called Polar Bears Cafe. It is a slice of life show. I thought it was for kids, but it turns out it just was for like 20 and 30 something women. And it's a cartoon about a polar bear who runs a cafe and all these animals who visit, and like humans exist in this universe too. It's just everyone lives together. Like, the polar bear is this pun-loving, wisecracking polar bear, and then his best friend is a grizzly bear who's very gruff but hardworking and just a good guy. He runs a bar called Bar the Grizzly across town. There's a panda who's a teen panda who is just a lazy piece of shit, and he's like really innocent, and he works part-time at the zoo. Like, he just goes into work and, you know, entertains kids and all these animals. There's a penguin who is kind of a salaryman, but nobody knows where he gets his money. He just drinks coffee all day, but sometimes he gets too drunk. And like, it's just such a sweet, wholesome show. And it's got subtitles. It's not dubbed, but it's, you know, like 20-minute episodes, like too many episodes each one. And there's a zookeeper who the panda, like, always is just trolling. And the panda's little sister has a huge crush on him. And then there's kind of a creeper guy who's, like, super into pandas. And panda's always running from him. And it's just, like, I don't know. It's great. It's just, like, the most wholesome, like, perfect for right now. And, you know, all the animals look very realistic. There's a llama that everyone... like, he's really, really smart, and he's super, super Catholic, because, of course, he's from South America. So there's, like, one scene where he goes, him and the alpaca go to mass, and they sing in the choir with humans. And so...
Oh, my God. I want to go watch this right now.
Yeah, if you follow Brandy on Twitter, you will see a lot of screenshots from this show, and it really does look adorable.
Yes, now it's all becoming clear.
Yeah, there's a sloth who, you know, he moves slowly, but he means well. And it's just, it's like the funniest show. It's just such a cute show. It's so, like, low energy. And you can watch it with kids, too, if they can read, you know. And it's just, because it's subtitled, and I don't know, there's just so many funny things. Like, my friend did a freelance thing where he worked for CNN. And there's a scene where there's a wolf who's friends with a tiger and a lion. And the lion is like this, like, preppy businessman, so the tiger's always giving him shit. But anyway, the wolf works at a bakery, and he wants his dream job to, like, open a bakery. And so there's a scene where he goes, he picks up the phone, he's like, hello, this is Wolf. And my friend printed out that picture when he was at CNN and then, like, held it up next to, like, a Wolf Blitzer, like, photo and, like, sent it to me. And so he texted me that photo today, like, incidentally. And so, it's just the sweetest show. All these different animals doing things, you know. Yeah, I could go on forever. But my favorite thing is there's an episode where Mama Panda and Mama King Penguin, they go to, like, a boy band show, which is just these five porcupines, And Mama Panda is always complaining about how lazy her son Panda is. And she's just like, I wish my son were hardworking like the capybaras. Because there's another opening act, the Capybara Kids. Yeah, it's great. Just watch it, please. Polar Bears.
Okay.
Cafe.
Yeah. I'm convinced.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to put that on the list. That sounds great.
Yeah. And my other quick plug is on Twitter. My Twitter is It's the Brandy, ITS, the Brandy with an I. I have two threads, TV related. I have one where I took every Democratic candidate and assigned like what character they would be on any Law and Order franchise. Like, I went through the whole thing. And then I have another ongoing thread that I've been cataloging for over a year where I have a theory that Succession, the TV show, is just gritty family circus. And I've been building this case in like at least 60 different comics over the years where like
it's Dolly really convincing. Shiv.
Yeah.
It really is.
Daddy Circus is Logan. Thel the mom is Jerry. And like, you know, like PJ, the little baby, is Roman. And the dog, Barfy the dog, is Tom. And the other dog, Sam, is Greg. And that is my theory. I've been building the case. So check those out. They'll be linked too.
The not me ghost is all the money. Hush money.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Like, they're haunted. That family is haunted. So yeah, that is my ongoing.
Amazing.
Plugs.
All right. Oh. And if that intrigues you, you got to click on that on the show notes.
Yes.
Get with that. All right. Sarah.
So once I sort of got tired of the Comedy Store documentary, I was like, oh shit, there's this documentary that has been sitting on my DVR since March of 2019. So 17 years ago in 2020 time. Called I Am Richard Pryor. And I was like, all right, like, let's actually dig into this and see what this documentary has to say. Well, I started watching it and it aired on the Paramount Network, which I was like, okay, I don't really feel like this is a job for advertising to break in. Like, you know, like, let's tell this horrible story about how he ran past his family while he was on fire, and then let's advertise a Suburban. Like, that's very weird. And then there's this whole bit at the end with his wife, and like they're filming her scattering his ashes. Like, she waited until 2019 to do that. I mean, it's not good, and I can't recommend it. But it did make me wish that he and his life and the phases of his career had gotten the Comedy Store treatment, and not from Mike Binder. There is a lot of, like, he opens right away with this interview with Dinah Shore where he's talking about the economic advantageousness of racism. And then you get right into his family history, which is very baroque. And like, all the tools are there for this amazing document that also, like, the Comedy Store at least does a little bit about his process, that, I mean, it doesn't exactly it doesn't tell you why he was so good, but it at least shows you how some of these things got built. And there's not enough of that here. There's just kind of like, it's a basic cable documentary and there's only so hard they can push, I think. So I would like to see this remade. I don't know, maybe for PBS. I actually think I had saved it because I thought it was American Masters and it was not. So yeah, I think it's probably available on Paramount Plus. just kidding, Dave.
They have an app. I'll look it up. You can rent or buy it on Google Play and Apple TV or YouTube or Vudu. But it sounds like you shouldn't.
I mean, I wouldn't. No, I would find some other means by which to immerse yourself in his work, because this documentary, like, all it does really is tell you that you should be watching either his actual work or something else about him. So yeah, I would.
Is there
would
like a
this one.
Definitive book about him? I don't know.
I don't know.
If you know, let us know on Twitter, and we will retweet you.
Yes, please. At like any other materials, I would welcome digging in, but this is not the sit for you guys, I don't think. What you might enjoy, speaking of things that you can listen to, possibly from the library, you can listen to our very special 90210 book. There is an audio version. It is available on audible.com. There will be a link in the show notes. So if you are not a reader for whatever reason, or you would just prefer the, I'm not going to say soothing, but let's go with familiar tones of me and Tara swearing at Brandon in your ear holes instead of your eye holes, that is fine. We are there for you. We had a like pretty fun roller coaster ride recording it. Once again, audible.com. You can also listen to some chapters that didn't make it into the final cut of the book just by subscribing to the podcast Again With This. That is at againwiththispodcast.com. Also at againwiththis90210.com. We got a URL for all your needs. I forget which chapters we've got coming up, but we've already aired Trisha the Figure Skater and Mr. Pony, which is Brenda getting robbed at the Peach Pit. Because Brandon is an ass. So that's some audio styles for you. And our ATX panel, in which we were interviewed by Linda and Linda's dog, Brian, is also up on YouTube in perpetuity. So if you missed that, you can find that on ATX's YouTube channel. And we'll link to that in the show notes as well.
All right. So on the next great American pop culture quiz show, it is the finals of season one.
Ooh,
dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun.
It was a really good game, too. So.
A victor will be crowned.
Check that out at usaquizshow.com. And on the next extra, extra hot great, it's Tara makes everybody watch Shangri-La Plaza. And if you don't know what that is, that's fine.
Exactly.
It's really weird. It's a time capsule of
1990.
Everything.
Yeah.
You can watch it online.
Yeah, and we'll link it in the show notes.
So watch it if you're curious. That's all I'll say. Just discover it for yourself.
Yep.
And then right here on the next EHG Prime, we're going to be talking about The Right Stuff with Eaters Adam Musa. So look forward to that next week.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Corey, not a boy, AH. It is counting down to the countdown to Christmas 2035. She writes, cast one of the 52 original Christmas movies coming to the Hallmark chip in your brain in 2035. Who is today's teen star or young upstart who will be our heroine, causing viewers to say, hey, I remember her? Who will be the non-threatening inevitable love interest? What shenanigans will throw them together in Elfville? Bonus points for sassy best friend, stern boss lady, or affable widowed dad. I was so glad we had this one. What?
Nothing.
Oh, Dave was staring at me pointedly. I was glad we had this one in the hopper because, Brandy, I know you are either did or are preparing to be on our friend Dave and Jeb's podcast about Hallmark movies. Okay. Dave and Jeb aren't mean, which we have talked about when both of them separately and together have been on this podcast. So, Brandy, please start us off.
All right. My Christmas movie is called Snitching for Christmas. And it stars Claudia Conway and her teen upstart. She works at marketing for a political advertising firm. Her boss, obviously, after getting out of the political game because it was just too much, her boss is AOC, very nurturing boss. And her love interest, you know what? I think her love interest is, she's more of a matchmaker, but she's too busy to find love. And she basically goes home for Christmas to her parents' house. And just the chaos ensues there. I haven't really thought about it more than that, but she finds out that the true meaning of Christmas is not your family as much as it's sharing what your family is doing with the world. So that is my movie.
Very good. Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay. Alicia Beau of 13 Reasons Why is our heroine Ashley Catan, a real estate attorney by day, unlikably competitive board game leaguer by night. And by unlikably competitive, I mean she's the Hallmark version of that. She's not even in the same zip code as me, Tara. She just, you know, nicely asks people not to roll the pips off the die, and everyone's like, what a bitch. Anyway, she's supposed to go to her Ken doll genitaled fiance's parents' home for Christmas. This is played by KJ, what's his name, from Appa. Riverdale. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Right after the weekend-long above-board tournament, where naturally she's snowed in on Christmas Eve, all alone, almost, in a near-empty bed and breakfast with just the equally competitive half-zip sweater enthusiast who bested her at Candyland, Jacob, who is played by Nat Wolff of the Naked Brothers Band. Encouraged by the kindly white-whiskered B&B proprietor Nico, Jaime Camille, Jane the Virgin, mm-hmm. to work it out in front of his fireplace, Ashley and Jacob soon learn to play well with at least one other in Yule, Y-U-L-E, Be Sorry, like the game. Don't get up. I'll fire myself.
That's too clever.
It is literally too clever. I apologize. Who's next? All right,
I will go next because apparently Dave has a magnum opus that he needs to wind up.
No. You know, everything we've heard so far has been pretty big and grand. So,
all right, well, I'll go next anyway. Our heroine is, I also was in a Riverdale mood, so I went with Lily Reinhart. She, I think she's trying to break out of her lane with stuff like Hustlers, and I want good things for her, but then she keeps fucking up with, like, you know, she'll post like a side boob photo on Instagram and then put a caption that's like vote or whatever, and then, you know, plus she said that shooting in Vancouver was like being in prison, and plus on top of that she published a book of poetry this year. I'm just saying, she's doing a lot. Most of it's annoying. It's going to keep her from breaking out off of the A-list, so I think in 15 years she's going to be prime Hallmark material. This is my gamble.
Yeah,
her non-threatening love interest, I'm gonna go with Hayden Zetto from The Edge of 17, and also from a recurring role in season one of Lodge 49. I'm going to give Hallmark the benefit of the doubt that in 15 years they will trust their audience not to go into full meltdown of the idea of an interracial romance. For a stern boss lady, I'm going to go with Robin Givens for a winky Riverdale reunion, because she has a recurring role on that show. Here are the shenanigans. With the caveat that this is so imbecilic, it's probably already been the premise of a Hallmark Christmas movie, and I just don't know. Beth, Lily Reinhart, is the assistant cookie editor at Marla Newland Entertaining, a venerable magazine founded by the famed doyen of gracious living, that's Robin Givens. When she finds out she has a chance to get promoted to senior cookie editor, she goes looking for an edge over the competition and finds it in a Pixtagram account called Quentin's Cookies, where an anonymous guy in a small Ohio town makes the most beautifully decorated sugar cookies Beth has ever seen. After he ignores her DMs, she decides to journey to Pine Falls and pitch him in person for a feature in the magazine, not prepared for how publicity-shy Quentin is or how cute. This is Hayden Zetto, of course. What will transpire, and will she get her feature finished in time to run in the Christmas issue? Of course, Hallmark doesn't know how publishing deadlines work, so that could be on Christmas Eve for movie purposes. It's fine. All of this goes down in A Sprinkle of Love.
Oh.
Dave.
Wow. Well, first of all, I have to acknowledge the debt I owe to Dave and Jeb Armin. Which forced me
also a past guest of the show.
Watched Pumpkin Pie Wars, my very first and only so far Hallmark Channel movie. Mm-hmm. And plus, then I learned about other tropes that are often in Hallmark movies, such as ghosts and lady detectives and whatnot.
Angels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I tried to cram as many Hallmarky things as I could remember into this. The first thing I thought, though, is the key to casting for a future movie is finding today's right middling show that exists today. And then you get one person from there, and then you get one bigger name who by then has been out of the game for a while.
Right.
So my female, and these are nobody special. My female lead is Jessica Green, who is the lead of that terrible show called The Outpost. Remember when we watched that?
Yeah. Oh God.
She kind of looks like an elf kind
of. She does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
She's the lead. All
right. Sure.
The male lead is Todd Grinnell
from One Day at a Time.
Uh-huh. He plays Schneider.
Hot Schneider. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. He's older, but that's fine if the guy is older.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
Yep.
He plays Sam, who is back home for the holidays from his high-powered, and it's always this, advertising or marketing job.
Uh-huh.
The town remembers Sam as the happy kid full of vim and vigor and Christmas spirit and all that kind of stuff. But what happened? He lost all his Christmas spirit. Also, his mom's bakery is going under. Also, there's a ghost detective named Inspector Claus. Kathy, or Kat.
Uh-huh.
Is running for city council.
Yep.
Because she's a go-go 20s girl, but she's running a campaign of everything the same because change is scary and routine is soothing and safe.
Yes. Yep.
Inspector Claus is sniffing around town, figuring out who's naughty and who's nice. And you know, the mayor is sort of like a minor evil figure. He wants to build a big box plaza out there by Winter Pond. You know, the pond where every couple meets and falls in love while skating. Kat gets wind of the plaza plan and makes that the pillar of her campaign. But the townsfolk are so nice and have been so isolated for so long, they don't really know how culturally destructive stores like Home Department, Costless, and Roof Mart can be. She just can't break through to them. Enter Sam, who either probably crashes into Kat on the pond or maybe in the bakery as Kat is taping a poster for her campaign up.
Sure.
And they find common ground in, one, love, and two, stopping the big bad box stores. How? Marketing! Sam creates the ultimate campaign, according to the show, but the one poster that we see uses the font Impact, so you know nobody was actually paying attention.
Probably also spelled wrong if in a Hallmark movie.
So town saved, and it's time for, at the end of the movie, it's time for a hand-holdy skate on Old Winter Pond. The last scene is Inspector Claus putting them both on the nice list on the same line, which means they are soulmates forever. The end.
Yay!
I love it.
That music means it is time for the canon, a user submission this week. Let's get to it.
Hi, Extra Hot Great Friends. This is Francoise, and yes, I'm still buzzing from getting Parts Unknown Senegal into the canon. So I'm going to do something that's probably foolish and present another episode of Parts Unknown for consideration. This time it's Season 8, Episode 5, Houston. So a quick note about why I think an America episode of the show needs to be present in the canon alongside the Senegal episode. Parts Unknown had two kinds of shows, one where Tony traveled to foreign destinations, some rough, some luxurious, and allowed those of us sitting on the couch to vicariously learn about and travel to foreign places. But then he'd also travel to places in the U.S. with that same sense of curiosity and empathy. These are places that Americans have heard of and almost certainly have opinions about, and he's pushing us to see our own country with the same sense of wonder and interest as his foreign travels. And there is no better example of him pushing back on a stereotype and challenging his audience to reconsider than this Houston episode. For one, there are no white people in this episode. Tony's Houston is immigrants, first-generation Americans, and African-Americans. In a state we see as uniformly red on the Electoral College map every 4 years, Tony is urging us to look again. Houston is not white conservative cowboys. It's South Asians, Central Americans, Mexicans, Vietnamese, West and Central Africans. Immigrants and refugees who came here seeking a better life and found it. They are pillars of their communities. Their children, first-generation Americans, are thriving. They believe in the American dream and in the generosity of Texans and America. Here, for example, is Sunil Thakkar, the owner of Masala Radio, or Brian Tran, whose family owns the Palacios Town General Store.
This is fulfilling my dream. I came here with nothing, 17 years old. First job I ever worked in washing dishes. So my boss told me and said, hey, you a hard worker. You know, maybe one day you're going to be the boss. So I have that thing in my mind. After I get married, I told my wife, I said, open the restaurant. And she stopped me. She said, no, you're crazy. So after all my kids went to college, they got a good job, I would mention again. And she said, okay.
Wow, that's nice.
These are people who made Texas their home and they like it. Time and again, people talk about how they feel welcome, how they trust their neighbors, how the community cares for them. Like with the Senegal episode, this is a food show only in the sense that food gets people around a table to talk and learn from each other. Usually Tony is eating incredible things, and he does that in this episode with that sexy-ass barbecue or that Guatemalan-Vietnamese fusion home-cooked meal. But I love the scene in the high school where this time he's got a tray of middling cafeteria food, and that's just fine with him. Because it's not the food he came for, it's the company.
So after school, when you graduate high school, what do you want to do next?
I want to be a fashion designer, and I want to go to college. I want to study more.
What are you going
to
do?
I wanted to go to college, and I want to study medicine. I am between medicine and engineering.
What do you want to do?
I'm playing soccer.
Soccer is not a plan, my friend.
And I also get a little teary from that clip when I see the principal, himself a refugee who started over in America, gazing at his students with so much pride about this discussion. He's so proud of their English skills and their ambition and their bright futures. But the most important thing about this episode, the one that pushes it to true greatness, is its air date, October 30th, 2016. 8 days before Americans went to the polls. Yes, this episode is Tony's closing argument of the 2016 election. Insert clip four here.
Some people say, make America great again. I say America was great all along. Some of us just forgot why. It's great because your grandfather and my grandfather and just about everybody's damn grandfather or great-grandfather crammed themselves, snuck, bought their way or was dragged onto a boat, and one way or another allowed themselves eventually to dream. You still can. There's still room. And in some places in America, apparently, you are still welcome. Welcome, stranger. This land is your land.
It's not exactly subtle, but I find it totally effective. America is great, and its greatness is derived from immigrants and refugees, from non-white people and the food, music, culture, language, and community they bring with them. These are not people to fear, not people to vote against, but very often the best among us and the truest believers in the American dream and democracy. I personally watched this episode for the first time a few weeks after the election. I remember getting about halfway through and realizing he's not going to talk to any white people. He's going to center immigrant and black stories. He's going to humanize their struggles, their stories, and their communities. And then I burst into tears, which granted I was doing a lot of in those fragile weeks post-election, and I wished that every American voter had been forced to watch this beautiful episode before they'd cast their vote. This is how Tony saw America, and it's the America I want to live in. Thank you.
Thank you, Françoise. Brandy, you picked this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
Well, I mean, first of all, good luck getting me not to go with a Bourdain episode, like, to admit into the canon. I mean, I would love to see a Bourdain nonet, because I don't know if it exists. Like, they're just, I would love to see it. Like, if there's just one where he's completely just, fuck everything, like, fuck this culture. Like, I mean, it just doesn't, you know, so that's spoiler alert. But I do remember when I watched this, because I remember I would, my ex and I would, we would just watch food shows all the time. And I remember watching, before I watched this one again, I rewatched the London one. And it's just when he's focusing on, like, turmoil in a country, like, you don't really hear it in this episode, but, you know, the London one was very much talking about the Brexit and just chatting with people over food, because I think food does disarm people in general, just when they're eating and they're just kind of chatting about whatever. And it was so great just because this one specifically, I liked when he was talking to the high school students because he's been all over the world. And typically if just you're a kid and you're, you know, even if you're an adult and some white guy's just sitting down like, hey, what's it like being an immigrant and all that stuff? And, you know, you get wary of that stuff. And he was able to talk to them about places that he's been, like where they are from. So I thought that was pretty cool and pretty special. And it was just so tightly, like, just going all over the place. I mean, he really only talked to, like, Slim Thug and was, like, the only, like, non-immigrant people I think he talked to, really, for the most part. But it was just such a great look into, like, you know, I could have gone, like, 2 hours on this one, just random immigrant populations. And I guess, like, I didn't think Houston was, you know, like redneck or anything. And I just was familiar from like a lot of black people in Houston, like black Americans, not immigrants. But like, it reminds me of kind of like Minneapolis too, because we have a lot of immigrants up here. We have a lot of like St. Paul's like a quarter Hmong. We have a lot of East Africans. We have a large Liberian population. And just seeing how all of that, you know, like, melts together and all the different foods and, you know, all the different, like, not just eating the food, but harvesting food. That was pretty cool. Like the agrarian stuff in the garden that people were able to have. It was just so nice. Showing how people are bringing their cultures to the U.S. and maintaining them as opposed to assimilating. So I just enjoyed it. I always enjoy Bourdain, and you always learn something each time. So it just made me want to like go out and about even in Minneapolis. And I've always wanted to get down to Houston. I've never been. So hopefully one day.
A lot of concrete in Houston. and there used to be a soup plantation in Houston too, but it's closed.
It was the Sweet Tomatoes.
Right. Who's not there anymore? R.I.P.
Plantation. R.I.P. Both Tony Bourdain and Sweet Tomatoes.
Yes, we lost them both.
Yeah. Sarah, please go next.
People who have listened to me on any podcast really know that I sort of say aloud to someone, probably once a week, that the world is a lesser, poorer place because Freddie Mercury is no longer in it with us. And I have begun of late to feel the same way about Bourdain. Mm-hmm. Just like not only did this make me crave meat for, like, I've been a vegetarian for 20 years. I am married to a Southerner. I am almost never tempted by what used to be a pig, but oh my God, that barbecue. Yeah. And these loving close-ups just of the side dishes, which, like, it's Texas, like, I can't eat those either because there's a big hunk of like fat in there. But oh my God, so delicious to look at. But it's also a master class in how to talk to people and be curious about the world and sort of greet it each day with this optimism about what it can teach you, which I don't think we'd have enough of, and which he was totally effortless at while having charisma. Like the part where he is talking to the high school kids was notable, I thought, because like not everyone can do it. Like not everyone can talk to strangers anyway, but especially like teenagers, he's just sort of like, so what's that like? And then he's able to find common ground always, and often that's the food, which is a smart way into it. But a lot of it is him and how he was in the world, and we need him, and I'm mad that he left. And the end, I don't know, like, I don't know if anyone else is having a rough one this year, but like, you still can, there's still room. I was like, like even hearing it again just now, I got a little misty. I think it was really something that I needed to watch. I also promptly went downstairs and demanded that we have shrimp and grits for dinner after watching this. And, I got them. So lucky me, but, this was a hopeful delight to watch. It's hard to find stuff that gives you hope, not just about like TV, but sort of the culture in general. But at the same time, it's bittersweet because I miss Bourdain. And I think that, like Freddie Mercury, we're a lesser, poorer world without him. But I don't know, maybe we can try to carry on and carry his banner of curiosity and bringing people together. But this was a delight to watch. And yeah, that's it. Thanks.
I agree about the barbecue. Holy hell. Every time I've gone anywhere here in Austin, it's always been like, so
it's dry rub here.
It's just dry.
Well, that's the thing. That's Texas. That's
why isn't, I know that's the style. That's the local style, but it's like, get some sauce. Like, how expensive could it be? Come on, guys. So seeing like the beans and the sauce being poured over these ribs, it was like, that's how you do it. We moved to the wrong place. I don't actually feel that way, but you know, it's like, that's the kind of barbecue I want. And every time they showed the potato, is like, let's have that today. And Dave was like, that's like just basically a bowl with sour cream in it. I was like, yeah. ditto the migas. Anytime they were in a restaurant, and Francoise was right that it was not really a restaurant-y heavy episode. It was a lot of, you know, home dinners, and that's great also. But I feel like, you know, this also feels like a time capsule because of the year that we're having, that half of all restaurants in Texas are going to close. If there is not significant government relief, like, it's a big deal. So like, it's going to be, Houston is going to be really different in a year, you know, between that and, you know, how the oil depression is going to affect the city as well. Not to be a downer. also not to be
hurricanes. Yay.
Plus they paved over their watershed, so as soon as the water rises, Houston's gone. So enjoy while you can.
You know, the other thing that was interesting about when he visited the school, where he was like, you know, this isn't a typical high school. And was like, well, it is called Lee, which like, a lot of high schools in Texas are. And I feel like that, if this were, you know, made this year, if he could have, that would be something that would not have gone uncommented upon. But, you know, that was an interesting tidbit as well. But yeah, there was obviously... It was lovely. I mean, I love the even random shots of like at the quinceañera hall of, you know, the owner who is not related to the birthday girl, like fluffing her dress before she comes out for her big reveal, like, you know, sweet stuff like that. And it is true that Houston is like kind of a microcosm of how politics are changing. And even though you think of it as of Texas as being a deep red place, like they elected a judge 2 years ago who is like a socialist and a prison abolitionist, like stuff is changing. It's not all bad. Is America generally still a land of opportunity? I don't know. I guess I have to say yes when I have my citizenship appointment at the end of this month. However, that aside, and you know, how much you can believe in the American dream in 2020, I will say that by the time they got to like the closing credits and all of the interview subjects, like assembling for their family portraits, I was like, a puddle. I'm only so strong and only so cynical. So thank you for this presentation. It was lovely. And especially, you know, it hit different for us now than it would have, you know, 3 years ago if we'd watched it then. Because we live here now and this is our home. So thank you, Francoise. This was lovely.
Another thing I would say, too, is that even though, things really suck here, to put it gently. I mean, still, like, honestly, would rather still be here than like fleeing an actual war zone. And so like, these people are going through hell where you're like, that really does give you perspective.
It does.
You know, I could just get like a job doing something I would less like to do. Like, I don't like, I have skills that are still like useful somewhere here in the US, and like, I have a home and I have all this stuff. And so it's like, you're seeing all these people fleeing and doing all this stuff. And you know, it's still America was never great, but it's still a good place for people, certain people. It's still safer. It's still a safer option for a large portion of people coming here.
Yes.
So like, that was great. And then a small thing that I really enjoyed, it was over the credits when like they were playing like the music and the meat was bouncing to the beat of the music. Like, I don't know why, it was such a small thing, but I was like, I love this so much.
Yeah, it was great. Dave.
All right. So I thought this was very optimistic and certainly a bomb for 2020 and where we are right now with, you know, asshats up on the top and all that kind of stuff. But I actually kind of thought this was incomplete because it is like optimistic to a fault, I think. And like that stuff at the end with like everybody just forgot that America was always great. I can think of some pretty big chunks of time, like almost all, where a lot of people can say it's not, you know, like it's a little antiseptic. I did enjoy all the stories for sure. And I want those Migas more than anything because our favorite Miga place has gone to shit.
Yes.
Oh,
I just thought it was like part of the immigrant experience is getting some shit, right? You don't deserve it, but you get it. And that just, there was no stories about that, that kind of thing, you know, didn't seem quite right. And a programming note, just in case you happen to watch an old version of this or you remember it, there was a big edit sometime between when this was on Netflix and its current home at HBO Max. There was a whole first segment that took place in Little India at a grocery store, and the grocery store was having an event with like a radio DJ from Masala Radio. And that guy was subsequently charged with sexual assault on a minor. And so that's been scrubbed.
Yeah, that's not in the HBO Max.
They expanded something else. I asked Francois if like, you know, I gave the list of everything that's in the show, all the immigrants. She said, no, that's the same. So they must have just expanded something.
Yeah.
So a little creepy note to this. But, you know, it happened. So I did enjoy it. I did not enjoy this as much as Senegal, I think, because I am more familiar, obviously, with American experiences than I am with African experiences. And this didn't have that street. I'm still thinking about that street bagel thing they had.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I got to figure that out where that can happen for me. You know, this was good. And it certainly was uplifting, if a little edited. Not as good as the Senegal one. So that's my stance. So let's put this to the official vote and see where we are. Brandy, do you think this is canon worthy or not?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Sarah?
Yes, I certainly do.
Tara?
I do too. Made me cry. What can I do? What can I say?
I'm going to say no, just because I don't think this is as strong as the Senegal one. And I think it was a bit washed out. So it doesn't matter though, because by 3-1, that means... So that means Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, Season 8, Episode 5, Houston. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
That's what I like about Texas.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has the winner.
I do. It is Ryan Murphy. Shocker. He's setting up another project at Netflix. This one is on Jeffrey Dahmer. He says he's going to be centering the victims, which I think is an interesting way into it. I think sometimes he is weirdly more disciplined when his stuff is on FX. But American Crime Story Season 2 was really an amazing journey. Even though it was about Andrew Cunanan. So I am cautiously optimistic, probably less cautiously than I should be.
And as the year 2020 continues to spiral down the toilet, who is our loser of the week?
Me, God. But actually, among the many shows that have been renewed and then unrenewed for pandemic-related reasons...
Can I ask quickly, like, is it just because they have to release from contracts and all that?
I don't know the specifics. Okay. I don't know. But
no, I don't mean this, but just in general. Why the show can't be in stasis.
That's my guess. My guess is that at a certain point, like, they can't hold this soundstage space or, like, people have to be released after because for contractual reasons from their, you know.
That makes sense.
That's my guess.
Anyways, back to the show in question.
The show in question. Is Glow. Netflix's Glow, one of my favorite shows, maybe of all time, honestly. It was already sad enough that it was going to be its final season, the fourth. And they had finished one episode. They had been back and started shooting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They had shot one episode. And so now that's it. Wow. So this sucks. nothing more to say. I'm really bummed out that this pandemic seems to be killing
the wrong people and things keep dying. Yes.
Yes.
Speaking about a lot of people, do you know what time it is? It's game time.
Game time.
Game time.
All right, everybody, this is the ninth game time of the season. The season scores are Tara 4. She wins today. She wins it all. Sarah 3, just behind, and value guest still with 1. Today we are playing My Name is Blank and You've Been Great from the good folks at EHG Assist on Twitter, and they earned themselves this thank you. Thank you. In honor of our guest, Brandy, today we are quizzing you on stand-up comedians who made the jump to TV.
Oh.
I will give you a hint about a character a comedian played on TV in the form of a terrible joke setup. If you can name the comedian after the first hint, you get 2 points. If you can't name it, you can ask for the punchline, which is either more info on the character or the comedian themselves. It varies. At this point, you name the comedian for 1 point. You only get one guess.
Okay.
So use that wisely.
Got it.
Tara, steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has 1 steel meal. I have 5 steel meals plus an extravaganza gong. Valued guest, 3 steel meals. Brandy, I know you listen, so you know how this works.
Great. All right, let's sort of picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, our order today, Tara, Brandy, Sarah, are we ready to play My Name is Blank and You've Been Great?
Yes.
Here we go. All right, Tara, so to remind you, we're going to start it off with the setup, and the next hint's the punchline.
Okay.
Have you heard the one about the office manager from Slough?
Ricky Gervais.
Correct. 2 points.
Okay.
Brandy, have you heard the one about the super nice widower with 3 kids in San Francisco?
Bob Saget.
Correct.
Yes.
Sarah, have you heard the one about the token white guy on the black sketch show?
Jim Carrey.
Correct. Everybody's got 2 points to start us off. Back to Tara. Have you heard the one about the New York City documentarian?
Paul Reiser.
Correct. Brandy, have you heard the one about the kid with a talking pube?
Nick Kroll.
Sarah, have you heard the one about the OBGYN who lives in Brooklyn Heights?
Mindy Kaling. No.
Incorrect. Okay. We're looking for...
Steel mill? Can I steel mill? Or is that... All right. Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby. That was a steel mill that I hear?
Yeah.
Correct. 1 point extra for Brandy.
Oh, yeah.
The hint was,
she doesn't live in Brooklyn Heights.
And then he says nothing because he's in jail now. No, I guess that's 2, right? Because she did it after the... Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 2 points. Yes.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Tara. Way to keep the eye on the prize. Tara.
Yes.
Have you heard the one about the recently divorced alcoholic mother of 3?
Oh, no. Hint.
And then she says, best rated new sitcom of 93-94.
Rhett Butler? Okay.
Back to Brandy. Have you heard the one about the bipolar lady with the weird agent?
Oh, man. Maria Bamford?
Nice.
Good for 2. Sarah, have you heard of the one about the lesbian gym owner?
Hint.
And then she says, I'm with the old one.
Steel meal? Can I?
Well, Sarah's got to answer incorrectly.
Oh, sorry.
First.
All right.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm with the old one.
And then she says, I'm with the old one.
Yeah, I don't know this.
Brandy, steel meal?
Wanda Sykes.
Correct. New Adventures of Old Christine.
Wow.
Tara.
Yeah.
Have you heard the one about the guy who married Wendy so she could get citizenship?
Wendy. Hint.
And then he says, treat yourself.
Aziz Ansari.
Good for one. Back to Brandy. Have you heard the one about the first primetime sitcom with a focus on an Asian family?
Margaret Cho.
Good for two. Sarah, have you heard the one about the mild-mannered innkeeper?
Bob Newhart.
Tara.
Yeah.
Have you heard the one about Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories?
Charlie Murphy?
And then, anybody before I?
Yeah, I'll use my last.
All right,
deal
last deal, Milk.
Yeah, this is
Dave
it.
Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle is correct. Oh, Brandy using unsteel mills. Good effect.
So
that's
well.
How you do it.
Was that two?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Brandy, have you heard the one about the clumsy bookstore owner?
Punchline, please.
And then she says, I'm gay.
Oh, Ellen DeGeneres.
Correct. This is for Sarah, and we'll take us into our score break. Have you heard the one about the neurotic talk show host with a thing for Mimi?
Have I? Drew Carey?
Another question. Anybody know it? And then he says, no flipping.
For Mimi. Oh, for Mimi Rogers. Right.
Correct, ma'am.
Gary Shandling.
Gary Shandling from The Larry Sanders Show. Trick question, gotcha. All right, Tara. Scores, please.
Okay. Sarah has 4. I have 6. Brandy is destroying us with 15.
Yeah.
Well done. All right. We've got another half of the game to get through, though. Tara?
Yep.
Have you heard the one about the crotchety cab driver who frequents Moyland Tavern?
Hint.
And then he says a whole bunch of words, but not the 7 words you can't say on television.
George Carlin?
Brandy, have you heard the one about nothing?
Seinfeld?
And then he says, what's the deal with that? Back to Sarah. Have you heard the one about the super pale guy raising 5 kids in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York City?
Jim Gaffigan?
Correct.
He's really pale.
Tara?
Yeah.
Have you heard the one about the DIY electrician over at Jimmy's Outfit?
Is this Tim Allen? Damn!
And then he says, I've recently experienced becoming a gazillionaire. Electrician, Jimmy's Outfit. We're talking Joe Rogan on news, radio.
Oh.
Brandy, have you heard the one about the New York City comedian who's tried to balance family, comedy, and life's little lessons?
Louis C.K.
And then he says, stand there while I masturbate.
Oh, no.
Sarah,
oh, boy.
Have you heard the one about the coked up director in L.A.?
Have I? I don't know. Could I hear the punchline, please?
And then he says, I was just canceled.
That could literally be anyone.
Oh, wait, again, let me give you another hint because this game's already over.
Yeah.
And then he says, I was just canceled as previously mentioned on this podcast, which I'm now listening to.
Oh. I know.
Oh, right. Mark Maron.
Correct. Tara.
Yes.
Have you heard the one about the host of Word on the Street in Detroit?
Word on the Street in Detroit. Hint.
And then he says, can you believe I got top billing over Will Smith once?
No. I don't know.
Anybody?
Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence, correct?
Oh, right.
Back to Brandy. Have you heard the one about the sports reporter who lives across the street from his parents?
I need a punchline.
And then he says, Deborah.
You can I don't know.
Deborah. Anybody?
Ray Romano.
Ray Romano is correct. Sarah, have you heard the one about the guy who's always going to reunite with Elizabeth?
No. Hint.
And then he says, you big dummy.
I don't know. Sorry.
That one I know. That's Red Fox.
Red Fox, Sanford, yeah. And Sun, correct.
Oh, right.
Oh, great. Now well, that's in my head.
For the next clue. 4 weeks.
Uh-huh. Tara, everybody's last question coming at you. Tara.
Okay.
Have you heard the one about the deadpan clown?
The deadpan clown, hint.
And then he says, Bakersfield is a long way from Paris.
En français.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yes, baskets, correct. Brandy, your last question. Have you heard the one about the alien living in the Rockies?
Punchline.
And then he says, Nanu, Nanu.
Oh, Robin Williams.
1 point. And last, for Sarah. Have you heard the one about the diner owner in Illinois?
Probably, but let's hear a punchline anyway.
And then she says something racist and gets kicked off her own show.
Oh, Roseanne Barr.
Roseanne Barr is correct for one, and that is regulation. So, Tara, let's get them final scores.
Well, it was a very exciting game in the basement. Sarah and I tied with 8 points each, but Brandy, as previously mentioned, kicked both our asses with 20 points.
Is the Brandy. Oh, my God. Wow. That was great.
Well done.
Some of the best Ryan Walds Jonesing we have seen yet.
Yes.
I was like really nervous because there are sometimes on Game Time where I'm like, I am going to get my ass kicked when I appear. So I'm very happy that I did a good job.
You really did.
Aww. I got the tiebreaker. Let's use it for our future steel meal. First person to shout out the comedian in question gets it.
Okay.
Have you heard the one about the handyman in Detroit?
That's Tim Allen.
That's Tim Allen. Yes, correct. And then he says, the person that did this. And then he says, asterisk, gorilla grunts. But I'm not going to do that.
No, don't.
All right, that's it. Congratulations, Brandy. Blowout.
Brandy. Valued
guest. Valued guest.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We had a couple laughs browsing the comedy store before going around the dial with stops at Emily in Paris, Polar Bears Cafe, and I am Richard Pryor. Corey Not a Boy tasked us with creating the Hallmark Christmas movies of the near future, while Francois journeyed to Houston to get that Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown episode into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Brandy, on behalf of Value Guests, was the winner of this week's Game Time from EHG Assist on Twitter. Next up is Shangri-La Plaza, woo, on Extra Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, The Right Stuff. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I'm gonna go cry about glow at Sweet Tomatoes. God damn it!
Sarah D. Bunting.
There's still room!
And Brandy Brown.
Well, time to go drink with the grizzly bear.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Chicken sandwich and french fries, fruit salad, carton of milk. Welcome to America, kids.